Hey, just wanted to let you guys know that we've been doing some interviews. We've had a lot of fun with them. But the next interview you guys are going to hear from us, you might want to put the headphones on for a couple parts of it.
there will be some editing involved, but at the same time, we want to let our guests speak their minds to a certain extent. So, but that said, it might be a little bit more mature than our typical show. So just take that in consideration and enjoy the show.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
So I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to the show very much. It's pretty...
Oh, I've listened on occasion.
We're really good. We have an amazing opening.
Which is, I just randomly pick apart, like, right now.
Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop.
Welcome to Dead Zone, the podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Rick.
And we have a special guest today to do a quick little interview with us, Andrew Wozniacki.
Crazy A!
Yay!
Yay! Welcome to the show.
I'm flattered. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. It's been while since we've seen each other.
Did I invite myself or did you invite me?
There's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B there, but we are welcome to facilitate these interviews. I think Dreadball fans the world around are you know, on the edge of their seat in anticipation for this battle coming up.
May all your listeners realize that this is not purely desperation on either of your parts. This was thought out and premeditated, and somehow we collectively thought that this would be a good idea for you to ask me questions.
Well, you know, it's funny because we were actually like getting ready to talk about what we were going to talk on the podcast, and then I get this tag on Facebook from Bread Droll, and I'm like, "Huh, what's this?" So it kind of worked out because we were going to record tonight, anyways.
Yeah.
I like throwing my associates' names under buses collectively. So you two were you two popped up first in the.
We're flattered.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Blind leading the blind.
So, so for this interview, we're going to do it a little bit differently than I think we have done in the past. We have a set of questions.
So better.
Better.
It depends on who you ask.
Yeah, the jury's still out on that. We'll see how the comments come in. But what we were thinking of doing is kind of a head to head. Interview where we interview you both one at a time to get a little insight on what you're planning for your upcoming league battle and get some insight on what's going on in your head, what kind of strategies you're going to implement against one another, and then we're going to put it out on the internet so that you can both listen to it ahead of time and adjust accordingly. But
I understand that my opponent is being interviewed separately.
Yes.
And then you, with the magic of audio editing, will splice our responses together.
Poorly.
Something
but yes.
like that.
Into some fantastic music medley.
Well, maybe Brian will do that. Not me.
There might be some music involved.
I'm anticipating auto-tune.
Well, I do have a remix that someone made of an old NES game called Journey to Silius.
Thank you.
And I really dig it.
Yes, that sounds brilliant.
Yes. So, to start things off, Andrew, if you wouldn't mind kind of introducing who you are to our audience, just in case they aren't aware of who you are and your involvement in Dreadball, and we'll kind of take it from there.
In regards to Dreadball, I would hope to be some man of mystery. I don't know if that's accurate anymore. I suppose for those fanatics that put dots together, they may recognize that I'm an administrator on the Facebook Dreadball Fanatics group, mm-hmm. after years of stalking some of the OG moderators, I somehow weaseled my way into a large troop of administrators, of which three apparently are ghosts, and there are other three that seem to get some work done occasionally. But in addition to that administrative role on social media, I also am a member of the Dreadball Rules Committee, otherwise known as DIGBY, otherwise known as the Dreadball Governing Body. I've had a little bit of influence in helping the second edition not have as many editorial mistakes as it otherwise would, and I'm almost entirely responsible for any editorial mistakes that readers may discover in the Magnetar Circuit supplement.
Okay.
Well, having read pretty much all of it myself just a couple days ago, there are few and far between. So great job on that front.
You're kind. Thank you. every little double space or single space that seems in error drives me through the locker room, and I just want to grind my teeth into the gum line. But I appreciate that. Thanks. A few others out there on the World Wide Web would disagree with you wholeheartedly, and I think would rather stab me in the eye.
Well, that's their prerogative, I guess. Just
the hell with them.
Wear your goggles. But cool. So obviously you're very involved in Dreadball. We've had a chance to meet on several occasions at Adepticon. Has been the big one. We've had a chance to play against each other, I think. Did we play against each other twice? Or just once?
It was so memorable, I...
That sounds about right for my gameplay.
Twice sounds about right. Yeah, sure.
Probably at
least. We
had
such a good time. I don't even recall our record.
I don't either, but I probably lost.
I was going to suggest Rick won.
Yeah, I won because I've never played you, and I've lost all my games to Brian, so that makes sense.
Is this the kind of moment where I have to share with you the other hats I wear, so it doesn't sound to listeners like I'm just some sort of grotesque blob in a dark room looking at Dreadball miniatures?
Sure.
I mean, sure.
I do like step into daylight on occasion. I wear the typical hats of a husband and a brother and a son and a cat herder, and I make money as a professor and an artist, and I like to tell dirty jokes, and I like to read, and I think that kind of rounds me out a bit. Speaking of rounding me out, I live by three principles as taught to me by my childhood idol, Jake the Snake Roberts. If you're not familiar, Jake the Snake was a popular professional wrestler in the mid-80s, retiring. I mean, arguably, you could say he still is on the circuit doing spot appearances. But I was privileged enough to meet him 3 years ago, and I had him sign a bunch of merchandise that I had.
That's pretty cool.
And, yeah, it was neat. So I'm at a wrestling event, and, of course, he's, like, the main attraction. So you stand in queue, and you get to be in front of him, and he's signing merch. And I say, you know, Mr. Roberts, it means a lot that you're here tonight. Thanks for coming, and I'm glad to see you're rebounding from cancer. And he cut me off, and he promptly said, shut the hell up and buy a t-shirt. And I thought that was the most perfect thing that Jake the Snake Roberts could possibly tell a fan. And I was just, I was over the moon. I bought a t-shirt. And later that night, he gave me my three guiding principles, which were, one, do yoga. Two, don't eat fast food. And three, don't do cocaine. And for the past 36 months, it's been a struggle, but I have eventually...
You count one of them out.
I've been able to follow that now for 48 hours. I took a...
well,
I relapsed a little bit yesterday for St. Patrick's Day and found myself at McDonald's for a shamrock shake.
Well, glad to hear you're staying strong and, you know, stay on that wagon.
The Shamrock Shake was repulsive, and I think I won't need one for quite a while.
Until next year.
No, I think we're going to go multiple years.
Well, you know, like, substance intake into your body is a very important thing to consider when you've got a major Dreadball match coming up.
Oh, right, right. We're talking about Yes, yes. Let's get back to it.
So, we were curious, what team are you planning to bring?
I think by the time this podcast airs, I will have made this information known already on some of our more popular social media formats. So I can go ahead and share with listeners. I will be taking the Judwan team into this intimate two-man tournament challenge throwdown. I can also, if you're interested, I could also share with you my team name. I seem to believe my opponent has already announced both his team and his team name. I am at this point prepared to do the same.
So what is your team name?
As I've already said, I'm taking the Judwan, and my team is fairly long. I have a tendency to name my teams long, expressive, I would say poetic, you know, bordering on the beauty of classic literature. I don't know if you'd like me to share with you the entire name or if I should just cut it into its more easily handed acronym. Do you have a preference?
Maybe I want to hear the whole thing.
I want to hear the whole thing, and then we'll get the acronym.
That's fine. So the
as full long name, as Brian can type it fast enough.
The full name of my Judwan team are the Circumpolar Conchies Unbalancing Competitors' Klutzy Stances, otherwise known as the Circumpolar.
So you get a whole bunch of silence from Brian because he was going to try and type that. I love it.
Thank you.
And I really do think, like, when it comes to the names of your teams, because, no, I haven't had the opportunity to play you, but I've seen your names at Dreadball events. There's a reason why they call you Crazy A, isn't there?
Well, you know, crazy like a fox. There is a psychology to team names in Dreadball, and I think a lot of coaches don't spend enough time with that consideration. We're discussing strategy, so I'm happy to go ahead and share with you my own secret sauce. Part of Dreadball is psychology, and if you can slightly put your opponent at some unease by little things, not necessarily poor sportsmanship. I'm not talking about that. I'm not like saying toss a beer into your opponent's face while gaming. You know, you're not doing anything unsportsmanlike, but subtle, small things that could just cause a little bit of uneasiness, a little bit of confusion, perhaps, a little bit of disdain. I can think of nothing better than to come up with some questionable team names. I try and do it on the up and up and have everything be completely above board. But sometimes people just look at the acronym and they get so frustrated. And that's, you know, that's par for course. That's fine. So the expression is just derogatory and lowbrow and demeaning. And it's popularized by white male aggression. And it's a disgusting term, and no one in their right mind should use it. I'm not using it, just to be clear. is an acronym, and any association it may have with, you know, a similar sounding word that is derivative of is just pure coincidence. As would be the case with my other team acronyms from years past, such as the or the. Again, those are just acronyms, not standing for anything other than long, poetic Dreadball related team names.
Those definitely are colorful team names.
Yeah. So, psychology plays a big part for you in playing the game.
Absolutely.
So, you've been playing Jeff for how long?
Jeff and I, we have thrown down over several years. I have a hard time off the top of my head thinking when we first did so. I can tell you we met at a gaming tournament outside of Pittsburgh. It was a Circle of the Swords gaming convention. I want to say it was like in Beaver Falls, which in and of itself is kind of funny. Maybe, well, regardless, we were at a convention. There were few of us who arrived, like most Dreadball tournaments. So there were, I think, an odd number, and maybe five. And the tournament organizer, Jeff and I, just completely strong-armed the tournament organizer into agreeing that we could all five of us do one epic ultimate match. And the ultimate match alone would serve as the tournament. And he agreed, and we did it. And it was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I believe the tournament organizer's wife won the tournament with the convicts. This was first edition, and this must have been 2014, I want to say. So, yeah, that's a very short question. I gave him a very long answer.
That's all right. So, I mean, it leads to your psychology. How do you still use psychology when playing against Jeff?
Jeff,
or do you?
Jeff is a delicate flower, and on top, that's not an affront to him. I think he would agree if called out on that. You know, he's a very compassionate, sensitive man from a country different from ours. And as a Canadian, I feel he's a little more sensitive to some of my euphemisms, some of my temperament, and certainly my drug abuse. I am a borderline alcoholic when it comes to gaming and Dreadball tournaments, and Jeff is a teetotaler in that way. So between my intoxication and his sobriety, it leads to hilarity.
I can actually see that now.
Yeah, yeah. Shenanigans.
I mean, it also depends on what kind of drunk you are and how observant you are. So, you know, kind of a narcissist, I can look at myself and acknowledge that when I am drunk, I'm a lot more verbose than I even am now. And I'm really funny. And I find clothes optional. I think all of these things just lend themselves, again, to throw that opponent. And Jeff, Jeff is definitely not funny, and he always wears his clothes, and he doesn't drink. So we're just like oil and water when we play against each other.
It sounds like it. This is going to be an online event, correct?
Well, yes. I don't know how far Jeff is through his vaccination process. I'm halfway through mine. I guess I'll be complete and supposedly, I think, immortal. Is that the status you get after your
I think so.
Vaccination is complete? That, yeah, I think
that's
I'll
what
be,
Maison Labs has told us.
So I'll be at Pantheon level by the time we have our first match in mid-April. And I don't know if Jeff will or not. He might not be able to handle my radiating light emitting if we were to be seen, you know, in person, let alone the sweet ambrosia that will be spilleth from my cup. So I think it's going to have to be online, and that may be safer for all parties considered, like extended family and such. So it's going to be online. That has its own hiccups, but nothing that we can't figure out. We have played a lot of online games, Jeff and I have, over the last 12 months, as you may or may not imagine. We can work out quite a few wrinkles.
So with the playing of a lot of games recently, I imagine a big part of that was due to the Magnetar circuit being announced. And your event is going to be playing through those pitches, correct?
Correct. One of the reasons why we chose to, one of the reasons why I threw the gauntlet down and challenged Jeff was for the very navel-gazing rationale that we need to sell the Magnetar circuit. Any Dreadball fan that's listening to this right now, please acknowledge this shameless plug that the Magnetar circuit, this expansion, and the four awesome resin miniatures that complement it are the lifeline to keeping Dreadball a live and active and supported game. And if we, as a collective, want to see more Dreadball product officially produced, manufactured by Mantic, we need to see strong sales numbers of the Magnetar circuit. So that leaves us with promoting the product. And typically that would happen inside of game stores and at conventions. And my God, we're in the middle of a pandemic where tournaments don't happen and game stores aren't open all that often and you can't do many demonstrations. So what are we left with? We're left with some savvy online marketing, which Mantic's Rob Berman has done a smashing job of. But then we're like, well, we probably should see what the games look like. Let's start hosting some games that put these pitches under focus. So I threw a challenge down to Jeff and said, let's do this and let's try and tie in a couple other people and see if we can't make this a larger deal. With that said, I mean, this is terribly personal, and I suppose anybody reading my posts or Jeff posts over the years might just be sick to death of us, and the last thing they want to do is having to witness he and I play each other. But maybe there's a dozen people out there that would be interested. We'll see. I don't know how this will turn out.
Well, I mean, you threw down the gauntlet and then ran us under the bus. I will say, though, that we are specifically two of those 10, 12 people that are very interested to see how this plays out.
Yeah.
Because I've never actually seen the two of you play. Other than drinking your hand in an ultimate game at Mantic Night.
Do we need to give context for any listeners that may not be familiar? Or do we just leave that dangling?
We leave that dangling.
That's fine.
I think it was funny. Before we decided that we wanted to do these interviews on tonight, we were going to do pretty much the whole episode of our show on the Magnetar circuit, because, like I mentioned earlier, I've recently read through the whole thing, and I love this book.
I'm about halfway through it.
And the new additions to it, I think, are intuitive. They make sense. They don't dramatically change how the game plays, which is always like a big concern. The new pitches, I think, are a blast and really creative and really puts you in that space that, you know, that these events are taking place
in. I'm so excited to play in the ocean. What's your,
Rick, I'm cutting you off here, but Brian, when you just said that you felt the rules did not dramatically change, I thought you said Germanically. So for the past 30 seconds, I've been trying to think of how Germany got into this, because that certainly wasn't any of our intent as we were authoring the various venues. But thank you. That's awesome. And Rick, what can I tell you? Speed read or spend more time with what matters most and put down that copy of Twilight.
Yes. He should do that.
The realization, there was a pause there because the realization is there's actually a copy of Twilight in the living room. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, my daughter has Twilight.
Daughter, right, uh-huh. It's okay.
It would take me a year to read Twilight, dude.
But I think Rick was leading into a
yeah,
question.
I did. I had a question.
Sorry,
about
yes. Go ahead, please.
Like something that actually has to do with Dreadball, not Twilight.
I'm ready.
Out of the new pitches, what's your favorite one?
I'm completely biased.
I know. That's why I asked.
My default answer would be the Memphis Max, because it's focused on league play, and my Dreadball League is one of the most important social events on my calendar. I'm thick as thieves with my brothers in the league, and Dreadball is that vehicle. At the end of the day, our friendship is strong enough that Dreadball could be, replaced with almost any other title. It's not, though. Dreadball is the means in which we celebrate our brotherhood and drink and food, and our camaraderie is just rooted around fantasy sports. In this case, literally a fantasy sport. So the Memphis Max kind of complements the idea of building up more cash reserves to then use that cash later down the line as your teams develop and progress. So the other three venues are awesome in their own right, but the Memphis Max is the one that has something, a little something, for league coaches. If any Dreadball coach is listening to this and they don't play in a league, well, then your enjoyment of the Memphis Max venue may not be as rich or as fulfilling as the other three. So I very much acknowledge that it's not going to be for everyone.
I could, I feel that I would enjoy playing at Memphis Max, as this is further into the book than I've read, but I really like incessant cheering. I could actually get fan checks.
So I guess for the listeners who haven't read the book yet, the fourth, we mentioned you need to purchase the book. The fourth venue is a space casino where gambling is encouraged, and with a little bit of savvy bet placing, a coach can end up pulling in revenue that far exceeds their normal 50 MC appearance fee or their typical winning fee.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And with the guest referee there, Thoth.
Oh, so yes, there's a guest referee. I think there's a pretty robust narrative around the location. Part of it includes then a guest referee.
Yeah, it's very Egyptian themed.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just gonna leave that there.
People can buy the book and read up on it.
If any Mantic fan wants to read into that, I'll let them do that themselves.
but no, this is really exciting.
But not to just talk about myself and the pitch that I'm probably most responsible for. This is a team effort, and the DGB and Rob Berman, we all had our fingers in all the pies, wherein the pies are the venues. Each of us contributed to making this volume as strong as it is, and we play tested countless games through each venue to make certain it would work and it would be fun and it wouldn't add onerous amounts of instruction or added time.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts to each venue that I just think are a blast, and they came to fruition pretty quickly. For years, we had dreamed of having some sort of supplement that would have alternative pitches. So our list, when we first had our pitch session to kick this off, it was immediate and pretty long. And we were able to have some good constructive back and forth about what would not make it into this book, what would make it into this book, what could possibly make it into a future book. The venues when dealing with a science fiction universe are endless. You know, it's just limited only by your imagination, as much of a cliche as that is to say. The trick is being able to take some incredible sometimes goofy, sometimes hardcore science fiction ideas and translate them into a rule set that can fit into a game that all of us really dig.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have time for one more question before you have to go and interview your opponent.
Oh, that's all. This was easy.
What? This was easy.
We wanted to also get your opinion. So one of the other new things in the book was the new support staff that are coming on. Do you have a favorite among them?
Yes, I do. My favorite support staff would have to be head coach. And my only trepidation in answering is that I do not foul. Fouling is certainly an important part of Dreadball, but my own play style doesn't gravitate towards that. That I suppose in large part, that's why I chose the Judd one to compete against Jeff in the tournament. Head coach is just so thematically rich and
he really is.
He's a really tall guy, you know.
It's a hysterical character to look at. It's really well sculpted. It was a joy to assemble. I've primed it. I've yet to apply color, but he's looking at me right now. And I think he's going to be a great buff for those teams that do like to commit fouls.
So I know a few players that would really need to get him.
Yeah.
I love the idea of any Dreadball coach being given hard choices. So you have a limited cash reserve. You need to spend that money. And sometimes you need to spend that money just because you're going up against an opponent in a one-off match. And you come up with a large, you know, you come up with some arbitrary sum and figure out how to compete against your opponent. Fine. But there's a way that you have to think about the metagame if you're in league play and you get money and you're like, okay, well, how do I spend this money to help me with the next match, but maybe more importantly, the match after in the third match. So as specialist, boy, that's tricky. Are you spending your 80 points on a regular coaching staff member? Do you go for a specialist? Is it better to buy the card and have 5 MC left over for maybe a purchase further down the line? Do you need to have those reserves ready for an MVP? You don't want to have unlimited reserves. That's no fun. You want to try and make people make choices, and the more difficult, in my opinion, the better.
Excellent.
And we have some really good options to make people sweat it out and think about whether or not they need to help themselves dash or foul or save themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been an absolute blast catching up with you, Andrew. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
I'm being kicked off in 34 minutes.
Well, so I think I'd actually like to bring you back after you guys finish the
Not draft. Happening.
Yes, it's happening.
All right.
We have to do the post-game interview.
I will find a bus, man.
That makes sense. I mean, if you end up having listeners shoot through the roof because of this back and forth between Jeff and I and your darling questions to us both, maybe you'll want to do this between each match. Who knows? You might be dying for more Dreadball content from the governing body.
I think he's just roping us into another.
I know. That's what I was like, wait, what's he doing to us?
What's Crazy Gang up to? I'll leave you with this before you start asking questions to the big bloke Jeff, which is Dreadball Fanatic. Dreadball Fanatics. Fanaticals? Fanatics. I guess that's it. Fanatics, yeah. Hey, coaches, seriously, check out the Magnetar circuit, and if you want, throw your money behind it, because that'll help all of Dreadball in the future.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Gentlemen, have a brilliant second half to this interview, and everything Jeff says about me is a lie.
And good night.
Good night. Love you both. Bye.
Hey everybody, this is John Jack from Crippled Fox Gaming, and you are listening to the lovely and talented Rick and Brian on Dead Zone, the podcast.
So we're doing these interviews with Crazy A.
Yep.
And Jeff Burbridge.
Yes.
Which they're doing this one-on-one tournament thing where they're going to go through the Magnetar circuit.
Yes.
They're going to play all the new pitches, which are awesome. Mm-hmm. We just finished up recording with Andrew.
Yeah.
So I figured while we're waiting to find out what Jeff's strategy is going to be, see if he does any psychological warfare, I figured while we have it,
yes,
let's check out the new minis, the Magnetar Marvels. So they're all resin,
mm-hmm.
which obviously I haven't opened them yet.
Yeah. They're coming out of their coming bubble out. Wrap.
Yay! Oh, so this is
what this is Thoth?
No, this is the one with the arm.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Gotcha. So it's the Fixer.
The Fixer. So of course, yeah. Of course, when I first actually,
I thought I saw the wing.
Oh there. No, there is a wing there. Okay, so this
Sorry,
is
the mechanic. The Fixer is the coach.
This is the one with the wings. It looks like this is the wings and so it's...
Gotcha. And the,
yeah,
the body
so
there.
They're not individually wrapped. Okay.
Gotcha, yeah. This is an unboxing done over a podcast.
Just randomly, because we have time.
Yeah.
And of course you get your Mantic Dreadball bases.
Yes. As you should.
Yes.
The Hex bases. The next bag is being unwrapped.
Dun, dun, dun.
They're pouring out onto the book.
Onto
as
the
I
book.
Speak. Look at that. That resin goodness.
Dude, it looks so cool.
So we're looking at the Fixer at the moment. He's missing his head.
Well, so, yeah. It's.
But
check out the head with the feet. It's just one piece, a head and a feet. I would totally play just that.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. I
like the quality. Like,
yeah, the quality of this is amazing.
Mm-hmm. The very, very fine detail. Looking at Thoth's here, there's a lot of nuance and intricate styling in the body.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, they definitely brought their A game.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, those are all, like, gold inlays. If you've seen the pictures of this guy, it's really cool.
I want to put him together so bad. Like, first.
The hydrator?
The hydrator. So, yeah. Obviously, we had a few minutes before Jeff, so we opened it up. I'm super excited to put these guys together.
Dude, the back of these tanks have text printed on them and, like, the
Seriously?
Dread ball... has like a
holy crap,
like it's a three-dimensional dread ball carved into it.
That's awesome. Wow,
they really stepped it up a notch. This is,
yeah, they did. These are awesome.
Like, not only is the book, like I was saying in our previous interview, the book is fantastic. Like, not
yeah.
only not only from a gameplay standpoint, like the pitches themselves, I think, are all really fascinating and are going to provide really unique matches.
Even one-offs.
Even one-offs in these pitches, I think, is going to be a blast. But on top of that, one thing we didn't get to talk with Andrew about is the historical matches.
Yes.
Which...
Pre-ran teams, which is so cool.
Yes. Pre-made league teams that actually, they include the fluff with how they got there. So it's not just teams that are leveled up. These are teams that have gone through many matches already. And so that means not only do they have experience, they also have injuries.
These
and
are
rookie players and star players. And,
these are the last hurrahs. They really are. They're, yeah. I mean, not to reference another book that...
that you should all read.
As our publishing did. But they are. It's like these are the last hurrahs of these teams,
mm-hmm.
and you get a play at the end result of what happened between this mass league play between these teams and a couple other teams potentially, mm-hmm. Which just adds to the whole idea of a supplement for Dreadball.
Yes.
I mean, when you look at Kings of War, you look at Dead Zone, you look at other game systems, you look at Star Saga with expansion, Dungeon Saga, now League of Infamy. All of these games have those added pieces that you get later and you continue your game.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you see that in a sports style game?
Especially a sports style game that has so many teams already.
Yeah.
Because that's like Dreadball version one, that was a big thing that they could add, right? They would add, I think it's usually about four teams they would add every
season. Yeah.
And I think there were six seasons.
Something like that.
Someone's going to correct me on that, and that is okay.
That's totally okay, because neither of us were, honestly, first edition Dreadball players. We were, we came into the Mantic universe.
Around the version
like,
two
that
time.
Was our first Adepticon. You as a participant, and me as my first year as a Pathfinder, i.e. Brian as my backup. that was the release of Dreadball 2nd Edition. This 2nd Edition is what we know.
Yeah.
But having a supplement a few years later, and it's nice and compact like our Dead Zone books.
Mm-hmm.
So, easy to fit in your bag.
Yep.
It has all the team stats updated in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the collection book because there's so much there.
Right.
But this just makes it really simple. Like, here are your teams.
Yep.
I love it.
It's like I was kind of mentioning before, I know we haven't talked much about what the changes are, and a big part of that is, you know, we're not going to say, okay, these are all the stats that change.
Yeah.
There were some significant changes. There were some that didn't have any changes. But the new support staff, I think, are really fascinating. I'll give you a little hint on how they work, is that they're not like your typical coaching staff, right? They each boost a specific test that you're doing, whether that's a dash test, whether that's an armor check, or whether that's a distract test. You can essentially use these support staff to amplify your results. And they do that by, rather than it just being like a reroll, which is a typical coaching staff move, you can decide how many successes you want, up to three.
I'm rereading that part right now.
Right?
I'm like, huh.
So basically, say I was doing a dash test and I needed one more success.
Well, Hydrator.
I put the hydrator, I put him in Sin Bin 1, and I now have that extra success. Say I needed two successes, I put him in Sin Bin 2, and it rotates just like every other coach assistant and everything like that. But it really puts an extra flavor on the push your luck kind of
it really does
thing. The as we were just saying, the models themselves look fantastic. I really love how they're the new flavor that they're going to add, and I think too, this is speculation, but it leaves room for some really cool future ones as well.
Well, yeah, because as of right now you have
three different tests
that your support is adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
And there are how many tests in the game?
There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them.
It's really exciting to have this book. But yeah, just wanted to pop in here while we were recording these interviews, because we had a few minutes before Jeff was online.
Yeah.
To check out the models together, talk a little bit about the book, and I hope you guys really understand how excited we are about this as well. To the fact that Brian and I are trying to figure out how we're going to swing doing a league of our own.
Not the movie, but the...
I knew you were going to say that. Of all the things.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no crying in Dreadball. Well, maybe it gets crazy, eh?
I mean, probably.
If I roll like last time I played you. But yeah, we'll get a couple of our buddies. Obviously, things are starting to open up.
Mm-hmm.
We are able to game at our local store, but at a reduced number.
Mm-hmm.
Mass, social distancing, the whole nine yards. But if we get a couple people, I think it'd be a blast for us to go through this too.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if we're going to put this at the beginning or the end or in the middle. Who knows?
We'll figure out where it winds up ultimately.
But the idea of us going through this as well, because it is, it's exciting that Mantic has released this supplement mm-hmm. for Dreadball. I'm hoping to see more for my game. You get one, now I want one.
I think that would be a really effective rotation for them to do. It gives to do like Dead Zone 1 year, Dreadball the next year for the sci-fi game. You know,
yeah.
As often as we can get more Starside content too, that'd be awesome.
Sure.
But I think these supplements are a great way to keep these games energized and
ever changing
and really relevant and pertinent in people's minds.
Yeah.
That it's like, hey, this is not a dead game. This is not a dying game by any stretch. I think this could really give new life to the franchise.
What I'm really hoping is that the supplements continue.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard anything yet, but I'm hoping Dead Zone gets a new supplement. Because I want some more models.
Right.
The other thing, though, is like I would love to see Mantic take Warpath and go the route of Kings of War.
Mm.
I think it'd be fun to play Kings of War, but with my Warpath models. And mm-hmm. that's just me. I mean, I enjoyed the first couple times I went through Warpath.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to bring me a book. Did you remember it?
I did not bring a book. Sorry.
I had loaned mine out at some point, so now I'm short a book. I want to start playing Warpath again. Because apparently I have a lot of mechs I want to use.
You do. You have them on display in front of me, too. It's kind of great. There's at least a half dozen Striders.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, technically 9 Striders. Because one is upstairs on the painting table.
And one's a plague.
And one's a plague. Like an actual plague. I mean, technically, I have 2 plagues out here.
Yep. 3 Iron Ancestors, 3 Grunt Bots, 1 Stunt Bot, and then the Spectre is hanging out there, too.
Spectre is hanging out there. I'm trying to decide what I want to do with the other Spectre I have. I like this pose.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I really enjoy it.
It's the dynamic, like sword up in lunging. The air
with the shield.
Yeah.
I'd really thought about. I don't know. I kind of want to take some mechs and like build a display.
That would be pretty cool.
Cause just the idea of a true mech battle
mm-hmm.
with these guys, because obviously you're on Mobile Armor Radio.
Yeah.
You and I have done. Because of you, we've done our mechs.
Because of you.
We've done our Gundam mechs. And I want to do it again.
Yeah. No, I feel the same. Yesterday I had the opportunity to either do work on my short story for the competition, which is due about the time that this podcast is going to air, or work on a new Strider Gundam mech that's going to be 100% Mantic. That's the goal with this one.
Yeah.
Is to do capture it where it's the, it's 100% Mantic, so I can enter in competitions maybe, but still gets that Gundam feel that I did with that my first one.
The first two?
First two.
Because they both are very much so Gundams.
True.
Yeah, so... Mechs. So, mechs.
Mechs indeed.
Yeah, I got a couple more I want to build, and I think I want to do... I almost thought about the whole idea of taking the Spectre and doing a little kit bashing and having him putting his sword through a Strider.
That would be pretty
because
slick.
You have the destroyed ones. Like, obviously that's the Plague Strider, but to, like, paint...
I mean, looking at that shattered, like, cockpit...
That doesn't have to be a...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. That's not Plague specific. It's just a destroyed cockpit there. So that might be a different notification system.
Your computer. Notifications are going nuts. Oh. Yeah, but I think that'd be really cool to do kind of that, the Spectre ripping apart a Strider. Or at the same time, like a Strider ripping apart a Stubbot.
Like, I won't lie. Like, I've been in a bit of a painting rut.
Same.
And, like, I got a whole bunch of Forge Fathers that were kind of ready to go to kind of paint as Death Watch Mandalorians.
Yeah.
And, but the paint scheme for them is not anything too crazy. It's a fairly, I won't say bland, but it's a very simple paint scheme, sure. Right? Because it's like blue and dark grays.
Yep.
Which is fine, but I think one thing that it keeps kind of coming to the back of my mind is I've been wanting to paint my Asterians like Macross. Like the Zentradi, because I've done my Khaleesi, yep, Dreadball team in the spirit of the Meltlandi, the female alien race in that series. Yeah. And so I'm like, you know what? Let's make all of the Asterians Zentradi.
I love that this is where we're going with our conversation, because we're getting ready to interview Jeff again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Jeff hates that we do this.
Well, I mean, that part, like, is not me converting Dreadball minis into Dead Zone minis necessarily. Correct. But it giving them a cohesive theme.
Yeah, giving him a non-Warpath theme. Because looking at an entire shelf of Cobra, yeah. It is what it is.
but the Spectra, so it'll be like Battleroids and
yeah,
and all that kind of fun stuff. They've got a couple of different, like, it's a lot like when I painted my Marauders, who were,
yeah,
the Zeon, right? So they had, for the most part, they're green, and it was on Marauders, which means it was green on green.
Green on green.
But they looked good. Yeah, thanks. I was able to put a differentiating factor between the two shades there. But then when it came to painting the mechs, it's like, I've got purples, I've got blacks, I got reds, I got blues. Like there was, yeah, there was less uniformity to it. And it was a little different to like wrap your head around when you're initially doing it. It's like, how is this going to look next to each other? But you got to hand it to those guys from the 80s when they were painting, you know, coming up with these color schemes. They had a lot
of cool concepts with color schemes.
There was a lot that went into them. And so I'm excited to do my Asterians in a Zentradi fashion.
Nice.
So it's going to be some whites with blue. It's going to be some greens with blue.
Cool.
Some greens with white. Some reds. Some blues. like I said, it's
all over the place.
It is all over the place. But it's still very much like primary colors. But I think that'll be a good moment to stop, because I think we're ready to go into the next interview.
Let's get Jeff on the line.
Hey, it's Community Pat, and you're listening to Dead Zone, the podcast 2.0 with Rick and Brian.
Rick and Brian? What happened to the other two yahoos? Why are you wasting my time with these guys? I don't even know who these guys are. Dead Zone 2.0, this is stupid.
Boom, boom, boom. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
Rick just stepped up to get a drink, so he'll be right back.
Oh, just so unprofessional, I'm leaving.
How are you doing, man?
Good, you need to know.
I'm mildly surprised that my webcam is working. It's funny though.
Did it by webcam?
Oh yeah, he's on webcam. But it's funny though.
Hi, Jeff!
Because on Zoom my webcam is not working, and I couldn't help but think of the video that you sent me earlier.
It's so true though, right? Like at the start of this whole thing, Skype was positioned to be the product.
Yep, yep.
Not anymore.
Oh, I gotta Zoom my uncle.
I I gotta teams my orthodontist.
Yeah.
Oh jeez.
When you get a chance.
I haven't watched the video yet, Jeff. I need to watch it.
It's pretty funny. There's a lot of profanity. A
series of them. The guy does like the CEO of Tide back when people were eating Tide dogs.
Oh boy. And
the CEO of Juul, back when people were concerned about the vaping, and there's a whole series of them. They're hilarious.
Oh man. Oh boy. I need to check these out.
Yeah.
I've been away from College Humor for a while.
So it's always funny to see somebody's gaming area. It's not my own.
Behold!
Because the last time I talked to Jeff, he was in his car.
Did I call you from the car last time?
Yeah, you were in your car when you videoed me.
Okay.
I'm not sure why.
I don't know, the chat. I think you texted me something about something, and I thought it'd be easier to call than try and text it back.
Yeah.
Was it wasn't any of the questions that we had asked.
No.
And then continued reading and found out the answers.
No, I mean, that would be a good, 90% of the questions like that.
Yeah. No, I think it was a printer question. Because I just got my resin printer at that time.
Right. Gotcha. So for the interview today, we're kind of keeping
test this one.
Haven't tested it yet, but it's been going good, so okay. I'm not too worried.
Cool.
We all laugh because that's words on a headstone there.
There's absolutely no way it could go wrong.
That's what Skype said.
Oh boy.
Well, okay. So how we're gonna plan to do this is basically kind of have a couple of quick questions to ask you. A little bit about, obviously we've done an interview with you before, but we can do another little quick intro to who you are in case people are unaware. We've gotten some new listeners, I think.
We have, which is kind of crazy.
And so kind of talk to you a little bit about the upcoming match against Andrew. Talk a little bit about the Magnetar Circuit. You're welcome to plug it. We are going to be plugging it too.
Because Andrew's telling everybody to plug that thing.
Well, I think it's kind of funny too, because right now we're recording all of this and plugging it, and it's sold out.
Yeah, no, it's important, right? Because I mean, every time anyone asks for more Dreadball, Mantic is always just like, well, we got to sell it, and then if people buy it, we'll make more.
Yeah.
So yeah, if it's sold out, that's good news.
They got their answer on this one.
Yeah. And how? Like,
yeah.
I just finished reading through pretty much all of it just a couple days ago, and I know I messaged you guys already, but man, this is a great book.
That's good. You can thank Andrew for a lot of the ease of reading it, because I think he put a lot of work into editing what we gave it.
He mentioned some
he
of that.
He did bring that up.
We gave him the content, and we gave it to him a bit late, because, people have lives, and he threw a hiss fit about it, and then I think he's almost over it now. It's been a few months, and...
I don't think he's over it.
I said almost over it. I mean, who was there for when he thought someone stole his Dreadball tokens, for crying out loud?
I don't know anything about that. Whole of it.
I think Brian was there.
Yeah, I was there for that one.
It was, five plastic tokens, and he just threw a hiss pit.
And wasn't it my tokens, I think?
I don't know, Brian. I mean... It's clearly nobody had a grand master plan to break into Adepticon and steal Andrew's Dreadball.
Steal Andrew's token.
It's definitely
somebody just put away the wrong tokens.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In Andrew's mind, that's just a level of poor organization and planning that is unacceptable.
Yeah. So it's an insult not only to him but to everyone.
So you're gonna, so obviously we talked to Andrew about a strategy, right?
Strategy. Yeah.
So are you going to bring up those tokens when you're playing against him?
He's pretty got a lot of pretty easy to push buttons, if that was ever the way you want it to go. I could mention how I handed him in my stuff late for the book. That would definitely get him going. I could suggest, you know, I might have found some tokens here that belonged to him, and maybe I took them by accident. That'd throw him right off his game.
Well, it's good to know that you've got some ammo, and I won't lie to you, this episode is going to be going live like at the end of this month.
Excellent. Well, we should have our teams painted by then and be ready to go. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure our schedule will be dictated by Andrew's availability. Mm. So we'll see. I mean, it's only 4 games. It should be, you know, 4 Fridays, but we'll see what happens. That's the hope. Yeah. I've been asking him to play a game of Dreadball since, I mean, he, like I said, he threw a little tantrum and didn't want to talk to me. So,
so we obviously know who you are, Jeff. Andrew obviously knows who you are, and he might have clued the listeners into a little bit of who you are. If you'd like to, now's your chance. If you'd like to set any of that record straight. Who is Jeff Burbage? How is he related to Dreadball in the current scene? And what are you gonna be doing for your upcoming match?
I'm Jeff Burbage. I got into Jeff. Dreadball when the first Kickstarter came out, which I think was 2012 for the original Dreadball Kickstarter. I backed it just looking for a new miniatures game to play. I previously played like Necromunda with a guy who moved away. Didn't really feel like playing that anymore because I played it with this guy and I didn't really feel like playing it with anyone else. It didn't end well. I didn't feel like playing that game anymore. So... I kind of was thinking Blood Bowl because it would be easy to paint. I'd never played it, but the idea of a sports game seemed fun. And Kickstarter was fairly new in general. Mm-hmm. I'd been doing it for a couple years, and so I kept an eye on it. And Dreadball popped up, and it was sports, and even better, it was sci-fi, not that fantasy garbage people seem to like. And so I backed it. Immediately, I went all in. Pretty sure I got not everything. I didn't get all the T-shirts and things that were available. I don't think I got like the challenge coin and the acrylic pitch and the MDF pitch, but just about everything else: the teams, the trophies, the special Kickstarter tokens. I went all in. Despite having absolutely no one lined up to play with, having never played it, having had no community to play with. And when I got it, I opened the box, looked at it, said, cool, and put it away. Theoretically forever, because I had no one to play it with. And then I was a fan of it on BoardGameGeek. And a guy saw that I liked it on BoardGameGeek and messaged me. He lived like 45 minutes from me. And he's like, hey, I also backed this thing. I'm interested in playing it. Do you want to get together and play? And instead of just saying no, I decided, sure, I've paid money for it. I don't know this guy, but hey, maybe he'll be a nice guy and I'll get to play the game. And that's where it started. He didn't kill me.
So Jeff, we recorded and you gave us a lot more detail on this same story.
Right.
I just gave Brian a little message in our notes that we're gonna link your episode to this one. Because I really I wanna jump forward because
sure.
You're with the Dreadball.
Right. So I got deeper and deeper and deeper into Dreadball, met a ton of people, went to a bunch of conventions. Begged my way onto the rules committee, and now I'm on the rules committee. We have been maintaining the FAQ and the updates for a couple years, and finally Mantic agreed to do more Dreadball. We keep asking them to do it. They finally said, yeah, let's do it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And the world is better for it.
We are. We said, hey, a book would be great, but what about miniatures? Can we have more miniatures? And they said yes, which shocked us all. We were sure there'd be no miniatures. We didn't push for a team because there are a lot of teams already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Despite that, I would love another team. I always want more teams. I think the Warpath universe is rich enough that, you know, any of us could immediately rattle off a dozen teams that we would want added to Dreadball.
Yeah.
But hey, if this sells well as it seems to be doing, go buy it by two, by three. We'll maybe get to do another one. And at some point, maybe we'll get a new team in there, which would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't about your tournament with Andrew, because it just crossed my mind. Is that a fan-made team that uses essentially the same model?
The snorkel one?
Is that a fan-made list?
I mean, technically the rules committee made it, since I made it. It's an unofficial team. Andrew and I did playtest it at his place when I was visiting him one weekend. And I adjusted it accordingly. I'd like to think it's fairly balanced, but again, it's unofficial. So,
but you know, it's Jeff, so list, it's official
but
enough.
I feel like it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to send that list to us?
It's on the Bread Doll blog. Have a look around. It's there somewhere. It's got a nice printed card you can print out that looks really professional.
Yep. Are you sure it's still unofficial?
I mean, if it's on Bread Doll, it's got to be official, right?
Right?
Yeah, I mean, who's to say? Me? I don't know.
So you got into a little bit with that you know Andrew. And so tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience, your history with your opponent going
my
into this match.
With my opponent. Well, I'm sure I don't remember interacting with him ever on Facebook before I met him, but I'm sure I probably did, just, you know, commenting on the same thing in the Dreadball Facebook group or Board Game Geek. But my one and only, what is it, the big convention in Indianapolis, Gen Con. The one and only Gen Con I ever went to. I only went to play Dreadball. I know it's a big convention. It was cool, but I really just went to play Dreadball. That's sort of why I travel to conventions, is to play Dreadball. Mm. So we played the tournament, and I don't know if it was in the middle of the tournament or afterward. Excuse me. Andrew came up to me, and he just said, oh, hey, I'm Andrew. I think we've probably interacted online somewhere, and, you know, it's nice to meet you. And that's when I first met him, you know, just said, hey, talked for a couple minutes. And then I'm sure I ran into him again at like another convention, talked more online. And I think it probably escalated when he decided to do a tournament. He's a Pathfinder. He's an official Mantic Pathfinder as well as being on the rules committee. And he put on a tournament in Washington, D.C. And I pulled up a map and went, wow, that's a really long drive to Washington, D.C. But it's at about the limit of what I feel like driving. I've got enough money right now to get a hotel room for the weekend, so I'm going to go. And that was what happened. I drove over to D.C. I booked a hotel. Stayed in the hotel and played in the tournament, got to meet Andrew, got to meet all the guys over there in D.C., a lot of really nice people, to the extent that I never stayed in a hotel after continuing to go. It was always somebody's house, usually Andrew's house, you know, super nice people over there. And that's really where our friendship grew. And now he needs me to teach him again who's better at Dreadball. I can.
So leading into that, then, you actually, as of this recording, just announced what team you're going to be playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked one of my favorite things about the Magnetar book. I mean, I love the different settings, but something I've wanted to do for a long time is get out a default build or a example build, I think, as they listed it in the book. But in my mind, it's the default roster for these teams, the Mutants and the Mechanites. I don't know how many times I've seen the question, I have these Mechanites. Does anyone know how I should put them together? I have this mutant team. What do I do with it? How
pretty
do I
sure think? I asked you that.
Everyone asked
that. I think someone literally asked that today.
I'm sure they did because, you know, there was no default roster for them. It would be nice if in the future they actually stuck that default roster or instructions in the box with them. But at least now it's in the Magnetar book.
Mm-hmm.
I was very careful when I built that list that you could build those models using the parts in one box of the team.
Gotcha.
Like in the past, I've built a Mechanite team. I mean, if I look just to my right here, I've got to have 20 Mechanites put together just for all the times I've used them between first edition and second edition. And, you know, I'm a what you see is what you get miniature player. So every time I, you know, redid the roster, I had to generally build one or two new Mechanite players. But that meant I had to buy many boxes to get all the pieces that I needed. Now, definitely that's the way you go for a power gamer. You build that team to be just devastating. But you can't do that with the basic box and 1,000 mega credits.
Gotcha.
So I split the difference between a full 8-player roster and a 6-player roster and put together a 7-player Mechanite roster and a 7-player mutant roster. They're not the best mutants you can build or the very best Mechanites you can build, but they're pretty good. They're fairly balanced versus the other teams. And I guess I will find out how they stack up. against what Andrew brings to this table.
And it kind of adds to the flavor. Like that's one of the historical matches you're talking about with the Mechanites versus the Mutants. They're playing on the airship pitch. And so that there's the fun factor of people falling off the top of that thing. it's really cool to see. And I think, like you're saying, it's cool to have, because those teams are so customizable, it's nice to have kind of a starting point for some people, I think.
I also, years ago, before I built this list, I built a spreadsheet for Excel, which helps you build these teams with points and everything on the Bread Doll blog. Go check it out. but I think I saw John Jack said he had used one of those spreadsheets just the other day to put together one of these teams, which I always like to hear.
Yeah.
That people are getting some use out of those things. Because, you know, they're as user-friendly as I felt like sinking time into these Excel spreadsheets. So they're not, you know, the best, easy-to-use things. Mm. But, yeah, so I've chosen the Mechanites for our tournament. I am hoping I get enough money over the course of the tournament to add a player if I can. Because like I said, you can definitely build better players than are on the default roster, but they're pricey. You gotta pay for those skill 3, strength 3, you know, attribute max players.
So because you're bringing the Mechanites, are you gonna go with, trying to bring some support staff?
I mean, I'm using obviously the default roster to start. So I'm going to build the, 7 players that are in the Magnetar circuit book. Not necessarily the historical team, although I think it might be the same. The default roster might be the same as the historical team. I can't recall if they were leveled up at all in that historical match. But yeah, I'm going to bring those 7 players. And yeah, so the two things I'd like to buy with any earnings through the 4 rounds of our Magnetar Circuit league, I keep saying tournament, our league type play where we earn money between games, I would like to buy another player, an eighth player, and I'd like to buy one of the new coaching specialists from the book. I'm thinking with the Mechanites, probably I would go with, I think it's the mechanic.
The armor check?
Yeah, she's very on theme with these guys because of her mechanic theming, but also they'll definitely benefit from the armor, depending on who Andrew... Did Andrew say who he's taking?
Yes, he did.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think I know who he's taking, so I might think, armor checks, because I don't think they're going to hurt me.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So if he's taking the Judwan, as I believe he is...
What gives you that idea?
Yeah. Because there's only six of them to paint. if that's the way he goes, then yeah, the mechanic's not going to help me a lot. Although there are hazards in the Magnetar circuit that aren't other players. So maybe, yes. The hydrator for the, I think it's dashing is also very good. Again, I want to go foul and take the Z's because,
you mean that tall guy in the trench coat?
Yeah, the coach. Head coach.
The fixer.
Yeah. I think it says in there that they just call him the head coach.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think it's hilarious. That idea of the two Z's in a trench coat was totally Andrew as well.
Just, I absolutely love it.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the best models. Although I really like the hydrator as well. A Flurple, I think it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That model came out really well. They're all great. They're sitting over there behind me on my desk, all primed and ready to be painted. As well, my bag of Mechanite parts is over there, ready to be. I may do that after we talk tonight. I may just turn around and glue in Mechanites together.
Well, you know.
Yeah. And I posted a picture of my colors. I'm going with a blue and black color scheme. Blue for their armor, black for their mechie bits, red eyes, and maybe some white lettering or numbers or whatever to highlight up the right, blue, right, white and blue.
So you mentioned talking a little bit about the dangers on the pitches and everything like that. The new pitches in Magnetar Circuit are all really fascinating. I'm really excited to play on them myself. Do you have a favorite?
I mean, I really like the one that was my brainchild, which is the Sky Pitch, Oval Spark 2. That was the one I brought to it. Having played them all, though, the water one is a lot of fun. Not as many hazards there, although the razor coral in the strike zones. It's different. It changes up your strategy because you don't run through those pitches you don't run through those strike zones to get where you're going because you're just gonna get hurt. And
yeah, that's the one I want to try.
Yeah.
It's a good one. And the castling is interesting because, I mean, your guys are sitting in the razor coral. So if they get bumped around, they're taking potentially damage on top of being, bumped around. The vines is also great. The vines growing out and everything. The gambling pitch is different. Obviously there aren't the same kind of hazards on that one. It's more about optimizing your money. But in league type play, that one could be very strategic for making some money. I can't remember what order we're playing them in. I think if I have my way, we'd play that one in the first half, either the first game, probably the second game would be better though. So we've already got some money we can wager. I wouldn't put it last though. At second or third probably actually would work best.
Yeah, I think unfortunately, like in the book, it is kind of the last one. But I definitely agree. Like I think it would have a bigger impact on the league if you do it as like the second Yeah,
I'll probably have a talk with Andrew and we sort of set up our schedule for these matches, and I would definitely lobby to have the forget the name of it, but have the gambling pitch second or third, just so if you make money, you can use that money in the at least one game, and hopefully you don't lose a lot of money.
Well, yeah, there's always that opportunity.
That is gambling, though, right? That is a possibility. You just bet a bunch of money and you lose.
Yeah, that's the Memphis Max pitch.
Memphis Max, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, so what are they? There's Memphis Max, Oval Star 2, New Atlantia, and Cablax 6?
Yeah, it's the Marsh one here.
Yeah,
open to it. Yeah, Calvax 6.
Yeah, so I mean they're all really good. It's hard to pick a favorite. Obviously, I have an attachment to the one that I had more input into, being the Oval Star 2 and the Sky Pitch. But I really like all of them, honestly. And we've played them several times in the course of developing the book.
Mm-hmm. And we were also talking with Andrew earlier about how the changes for the Magnetar circuit, like the new additions, really don't feel like they break any of the speed or gameplay that was already really tight and solid with second edition. And like we're saying, the pitches themselves are all really creative and thematic and really kind of put you in these more unique spaces to be playing this game.
That's really nice to hear, because like we did play test these things a fair bit, trying to make them, you know, not world breaking or not, you know, too game changing. You know, you want it to feel different, but you don't want it to be too different. You still want the feel of Dreadball, and you don't want it to completely change the way the game is played, but you want enough of a change that, you know, you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And again, I really hope we get to do another one of these things.
I hope we get to do one of these.
Yes, absolutely. I think
that's what I want. I want League of the Night, Magnetar, Jeff tries to take us on.
I'm really curious how many tournaments might take on this. It might be something where you know, when we get back into conventions and stuff, maybe it is more of like a theme, kind of like a league that we do, the League in a Day or League in a Night event. Maybe it is kind of the Magnetar Circuit event, and then you have a kind of a regular Dreadball mat or a tournament. But I really like the idea of that playing as an official tournament run.
The four games in a tournament?
Oh, yeah.
Sure, yeah. I mean, tournaments are generally four games. Mm-hmm. I always enjoyed the five-game tournament, but no one agreed with me on that, so four is the standard now. And again, there's, like you said, there's four locations in the new book, and totally that was in mind when we were putting it together, that four is a tournament generally. And so you could just do those are the four matches. It would be a lot of fun. The only thing you wouldn't really get out of it, and I think we talked, is the gambling one. If you're just doing a tournament, money earned wouldn't make a big difference unless you somehow sort of turned that money into extra tournament points or something. Like if you know, you made X amount of money, you got X tournament points added to your
X equals one VP.
Yeah, something like that.
X equals 2 VP and X equals 3 VP, and that goes towards your end.
Or based on how much you make more than your opponent, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or that money goes into fan checks.
For sure. I mean, there's multiple ways you could do it. You also lose out on the, you know, people falling off the pitch and just being gone, and now you've got to replace
True. Them.
You know, in a tournament where you reset every game, and you know, players who were lost over the course of the previous match just come back, there's not the same stakes.
they had really strong healthcare. But I mean, during the match, I mean, that's still huge during the match.
That is a loss during the match.
Oh, for sure. I'm looking forward to finding out how many Judwan can be thrown over the edge of that thing. Although, to be fair, I'm also worried that the Judwan faint will be super effective in just moving a guy off the edge of the
board. Yep.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about that. I have to make sure I have RAM on some of my Mecha Knight players. Or Shub or whatever they can get.
Yeah.
But, yeah. That's also why I think we added to that pitch that the action cards can be used as these other specific actions when you're on that pitch, like Shove and Grapple. Grapple is devastating on the sky pitch. That is legit the best. Because if you double that grapple, not only can you push him back, you can move him around to like any of 360 of your guy. So even if he's not even near the edge, if he's like 3 or 4 hexes away, you grapple him, you spin him around, and you shove him over the edge.
The Matsudan are probably going to be pretty devastating.
Oh, Matsudan are going to be rough.
Yeah, oh, they are. And it's not even a foul. He fell. What are you going to do?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Grapple is one of the best abilities on the Oval Star 2 Sky Pitch.
Well, we're really looking forward to the event itself. I don't know if you guys are planning to broadcast it as much and just kind of play amongst yourselves. Either way, it's going to be fun. I know Andrew's already trying to rope us into doing a post-game interview recording.
Tried to get Andrew to commit to a post-game.
He wanted
post-game.
Committing to things is not Andrew's favorite.
So, but what we absolutely are going to, are excited to hear how the game turns out. We know you guys are both, top tier players of this game. And so it's always exciting to see, when people of that caliber and coaches of that caliber, meet on the pitch.
Yes.
Especially during league.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I have, like I said, I've been bugging Andrew to play Dreadball over Zoom again for a few months now, and he's just not been into it. And then he came up with this idea. So I'm looking forward to playing. I haven't played any Dreadball in a while, although I did just get my daughter starting to play.
Nice.
Yeah, she's not a fanatic about it like her dad, but she enjoys it. Did she beat me the first game? I think she beat me the first game we played.
She's got a better record than I do against
her. Yep.
Yeah, so it's good. We've just been playing the human Tron Tech teams, both of us playing the human. So it's all 4+ stats, all very basic. Access to all the cards you want to use. It's very easy.
That's why I enjoy them.
Yeah, they're such an easy team to play and to teach that's the way we're going with it right now.
Excellent.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to playing with you guys again someday soon, hopefully.
Someday.
Yeah.
We've been talking about, especially with the event of this book, it's kind of getting that itch is coming back, and we're like, man, we need to get another league going around here. So we are going to see what we can do about organizing that.
We had a great league going here. Like it was building up a lot of steam. We had 8 players in the current season we were playing before the pandemic lockdown. And, I'm hoping we can get it back together. Doubtful we'll resume the season we were playing. We'll probably just scrap that and start a new season, see how many people are still interested. Unfortunately, my buddy Rob, who was really the main organizer of the thing, has moved, so he's not as close anymore. So we'll have to see how it works with him living now more like hour and a half, 2 hours away, whether he still makes the drive on the weekend to come play some league once we're allowed to, you know, play together again. He says he's going to. He's gung-ho about it now, but I can see a couple of two-hour drives a month, and he might get a little tired of it.
Yeah, we'll see. Possibly.
Yeah, if we can get, you know, 6 players or more for the, you know, season 4 or 3.5 or whatever you want to call it, that would be awesome. Because we were poised to have easily more than 10 players in our season 4. Like I said, we had 8 and we had interest from a ton of people, you know, friends and family and girlfriends and wives and husbands and everybody who was sort of like, oh, that does look fun. I'd like to try. So I guess we'll have to sort of send out the feelers when things start to open up again. But fingers crossed we get the interest that was there, at least, you know, some of it back. I had just painted a Zor team for one of the guys. He, you know, he's not a painter. He's not really a hobbyist. You know, he was a friend of Rob's and he wanted to play. He really liked the game, but he wanted his team painted. So he threw me a few dollars and I painted him a Zor team. They look great, but he's never used them. Like right before the lockdown.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still here. He hasn't even seen them in person. So hopefully he's still interested in playing because he's got a fairly expensive painted team sitting here.
Yeah. Well, we wish you, you know, best of luck on with that league as well as your upcoming one.
Thanks. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know how we're going to stream it, whether we'll just record it and post it or stream it live. I will figure it out. I think the idea is to do that, whether we create like a Bread Doll YouTube channel or whether we just stream it on the Fanatics group or the Bread Doll page. The videos will be somewhere for people to take a look at us playing. As far as I know, that's the plan.
You won't be able to go live on YouTube.
Oh, no.
No, they've changed, YouTube has changed their, structuring and laws and who can go live and who can't based on how many people you have subscribed and following.
Oh, that's
stupid.
Not really fair, but okay.
I agreed.
Yeah.
But like, we did is we went live with Twitch and then just posted it to YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in the past, so we've always Facebook just live. Streamed it on Facebook directly with like a Facebook Live. But I don't know what we'll do this time. Maybe that again. We'll figure it out.
Sounds good. Well, we'll be excited to catch it when it happens. So, unfortunately, that's about all the time we have for tonight, Jeff. But it was all great talking with you.
Always.
And can't wait to hear how this all turns out and probably have you guys on again.
Oh yeah, we'll take lots of pictures and videos, and we'll be announcing all the dates and times.
And I think I'll actually build my Mecha Knights now.
You know, there's a really good standard roster.
I know. I'm gonna grab my standard roster and I'm gonna build them.
Awesome.
All right. Well, you take care, Jeff.
All right, guys. Take care.
John Jack here from Dreadball Commercials. You've seen me. You love me. You know you want me. Here you're listening to Dead Zone, the podcast with Rick and Brian. Don't turn that dial or I'm coming for you.
Well, we just finished recording that second interview and oh boy.
Wow.
This is going to be quite the match.
There's something about the interaction between those two. It's like Andrew's got that really quiet, laid back, but you know he's got a punch to it.
Yeah.
And Jeff's like, nope, I'm here. Jude 1 versus Mecha Knights. That'll be a lot of fun to watch.
That'll be a lot of fun. It's Like I said in that last part of the interview there, these guys are at the top of their game. Like, they are really good at Dreadball. And so it's always always exciting to see when they face off against each other.
For sure. So I guess that kind of wraps it up for us.
Yep.
For Dead Zone the podcast this month. Not a lot of Dead Zone.
Not a lot of Dead Zone this month.
But there will be. There will be some more next month. So, I mean, that's the adventure that we have with Dead Zone the podcast, is we go into the other games. I'm hoping to take on Jared and get some Warpath into our Dead Zone.
Absolutely.
And see what we can do with that. And obviously, get our own league going. I want to play some Dreadball again.
Yes, absolutely.
And you brought it up just as I was starting to think I wanted to play Fantasy.
Yeah, that's
how it goes.
It's tough to
leave those on the shelf.
But no, it's a really exciting time, especially for Dreadball.
Yes.
There's great stuff happening with Dead Zone as well. Really exciting things on the horizon there. I've been listening to some of the other podcasts, Warpath.exe has some great content that came out. Mantic the podcast.
They've started like consistently putting out stuff, which is awesome. They've been putting out
some more podcasts. Just recently they did one with the Windhassar Publishing. Good friends of the show there.
Yeah.
Talking about all the books and lore that's going to be coming out. It's super exciting, guys. And we will be bringing you that coverage probably like a couple weeks after it happens.
Because that's what we do.
Yep. So with that, I've been Brian.
I'm still Rick.
And have a good night, everybody.
Bye.
I have to figure out what team I want to play, though. I still have my Rebs.
Trontec. No. No, because I painted them and we were going to play them. I'll have to go through and figure out something,
because
I'm going to play something I haven't painted.
Yeah.
It gives me an excuse to paint a team. And that is, from a hobby perspective, that's one of my favorite things about Dreadball, is you paint your team.
Yep.
That's it. You don't make an army list out of all the guys that you have access to. No. There's your list. That's it.
Yep. So it should be an exciting time. I might, as much as I want to play the Rebs now that they have some tweaks, the big thing for me right now is, because we're in that weird space of, are we going to move? Who knows? Should I keep stuff in storage? should I break it out? I'm just kind of in that space of like whether or not I want to dig out my Dreadball stuff from storage to pull out a new team to paint. I kind of want to do the Chromium Chargers. Would be kind of a neat one. I've liked the look of their models.
I don't think I have them.
If I do paint them, I want to paint them as the Geth from Mass Effect. Because someone did a really cool job of painting Legion from that game franchise using the Chromium model. And I'm like, yeah, that makes total sense. So it should be fun. It'll be kind of weird if I paint them different colors, though, like the Geth are in the video game. Simply because in Dreadball, they're technically the same player transforming into different modes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could just be like Transformers where they just get a different paint job from the inside.
Okay.
They're more than meets the eye.
Little red alert. Maybe some jazz going on.
Maybe.
As long as you have Blaster, I don't care.